We walk into the restaurant tired, grumpy, and hungry. And then we open the menu. At that point, we pause to ask, how do they get us to eat what they want us to eat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,198th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in St. Petersport who are tuned into the podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, I had the opportunity to live aboard a U.S. Navy ship some years back, and so became intimately familiar with a fine Navy cuisine cooked up in the ship's galley. To get to that food 3 times a day, I had to stand in line with fellow sailors as the mess hands filled up the trays of those at the head of the line. Part of what made standing in that line tolerable was the description of what we were to eat that was posted on the menu board. The description was always hopeful, as if we were going to be eating at a 5-star restaurant in New York City, instead of a haze-gray ship sailing about the South China Sea. The menu would read something like, today's entree is Swiss steak jardiniere, cubed round steak sautéed to seal in the flavor, and slowly baked with onions, carrots, tomato, celery with garlic, and seasoning. Of course, the food that would be plopped onto the tray by the smiling mess attendant would never live up to its menu promise, but I did not mind. In fact, I came to enjoy the taste and wondered who the menu wordsmith might be. Many years later, I still wonder at the talent displayed by the composers of restaurant menus and wonder how they get us to eat what they want us to eat. And so today, we're going to ask a menu engineer. His name is Greg Rapp of MenuEngineers.com. Greg, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Great to be
Let's
here.
Talk about menus for a while. I've got a couple of days. If
you got some time to go, right?
Me.
Good. So you're in Boston?
Today I'm in Boston. Last week I was in Sacramento, and the week before that somewhere in northern Minnesota.
And you get around.
I work on it. Yeah, I work on a different restaurant group each week. So at the end on Friday I have to hit Control-Alt-Delete on my brain so I don't put pancakes on the beer menu.
There you go. So. Well, Greg, what exactly is a restaurant menu engineer?
What I do is I go in and I help a restaurant team figure out what's going on in the restaurant, what people are eating, how profitable each one of their items are, and then I go in and help them create a menu that helps two things, that the restaurant group is going to make more money as we put together a menu for engineering is the profitability of what the item is, but also I'm going to help a guest find their new favorite item. And my job is to really help sell that customer 3 things because they're only going to have one today, but then they'll come back 2 more times if they find, you know, more items than they can have today. So the most important thing today is to bring a guest back after they come in.
Customer retention, the least expensive customer to get is an existing customer, right?
Exactly, but we want them to come in. In the old days, we'd try and sell them the most expensive or most profitable item, but today it's more important to bring them back 5 days a week and get them, you know, addicted to some of the foods that we have.
There you go. Well, I've never spoken with a restaurant menu engineer before and don't know if anybody else has in the audience. So
I don't think you're going to find one.
Yeah, let's start with you. How on earth did you become a restaurant menu engineer?
37 years ago, I was going to school in Pullman, Washington, up in eastern Washington, And I was living in a hotel, and I was in hotel school, and I was getting through school, and a restaurant was in a Chapter 11, and they were reorganizing, and the wife got the restaurant in a divorce. And she says, I don't know anything about the restaurant business. And I said, oh, I know everything. I'm in hotel school. So together, she and I turned this restaurant around in 3 months, and then we had to do a menu, and I didn't know how to do a menu, and so I started thinking about who knows about menus, and the textbooks back then were all about the history of menus. Well, who cares about how people ate in the 1800s? I started thinking, who knows how a person reads? And the answer back then was, newspapers are in the business of getting people to read, or magazines back then. It was all about how making things easy to read. And grocery stores were 200 years ahead of us. They knew how to get people to go down an aisle, and there was eye level and kid eye level, and you have to take 5 extra steps to get to the cheaper beers. So, you know, a grocery store is all engineered, and they actually lease their space to those foods there, and have what they call slottage, where we don't do that in the restaurant business. But once someone picks up a menu, you know, that one menu can sell billions and billions of dollars if it's a chain each year. So we want to make sure that we're dialed in on how we put that together.
So you went and researched those businesses who are in the business of getting people to read.
Exactly.
Wow. Now,
and I always look for who knows the knowledge. You know, there's always the knowledge out there, and if I want to find out about a golfer, I go to Golf Magazine and I study the golfer and find out. Golf Magazine knows where they eat, what they eat, what they drive, where they vacation, what they drink, you know, what they eat. That's their business. So just go find the information and bring it over and use it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. So the essential job then is to organize a menu to improve a restaurant's business. And for that, the restaurant pays you a salary or a wage, however you call it. And if you do a good job, then you stay in business. And since you've been in business for 37 years, you must be pretty good at it.
Thanks. Well, I have a guarantee that they'll make more money, or I give them their money back, and no one's ever asked for their money back. Because once you go through the process that I do with the restaurant, they really feel like they're on top of the mountain looking down, and they know what's going on in the restaurant. It really is a engaging project, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, before we turn to the restaurants themselves, I'd like to for you to tell us a little bit about consumers, we the consumers. And who are we these days, and are we any different than they were in the 1800s?
Well, yes, and there are four different types of consumers that I look at. There's some people that they don't want to read a menu. They just want to know what's good on the menu. So, you know, kind of bottom line it for them. These are typically the bosses. Men and women used to be in pinstripe suits. They'd come in, they'd sit down, and they would talk business. And, oh, gosh, they got to order something. So they look real quick and make a quick choice and hand the menu back and say, you know, bring it to me. They don't really care that much. Then there's some people that read the whole menu and they score it in their head and they go, oh, this place is known for steaks, but I had a steak last night and maybe I should have fish. Oh, fish might have mercury in it. And they score everything before they make their big decision. And they're more of the analytical type of person. Some people come into a restaurant for the people experience, and they want to sit in Sarah's section because Sarah's their favorite waiter or server. So they come in to see her, and they know everybody by name and
know the menu by heart.
Yeah, and they love it that we put the name of the manager out there on the front door, and they're all about people. And then the fourth type of person is a person who's on trend, and they come in and they order something on trend. They might not like it, but they, you know, tell everybody at the table that they're on trend, and they order what they think is what's hip today. So they love the attention when the manager comes over to their table and talks to them, and they feel important. So,
well, I certainly,
so we're going to create a menu that talks to everybody.
Wow. So I certainly know which one I am, I've got myself pretty well pegged by what you described there.
Help me with what you are, Michael.
I'm the first guy. You know, I walk in, what's good, feed me. My wife, other kind of person, you know, she's analytical. But I guess it takes all. So you make this presentation. Now, I wondered about trends, because we are in a world of trends. And given the power of our media these days, it would seem like we're much more trendy than we probably were in the 1800s.
Right. Well, yeah, things, even today, a restaurant in the middle of the country, in the U.S., they can look at both sides to find the trends, and then the trends start on the West Coast or East Coast, and then they move in. But if you're going to be a trendy restaurant, you have to be careful, because people that are that are followers of this are not loyal, where your type of person goes to the same restaurant over and over again. Think of the steakhouse that you have in town, you know. Those people get mad when you change the menu, but when you go to the trendy restaurant, the people get mad when you don't change the menu. So, you know, when I speak up at the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park, I've got a couple hundred chefs that are in the class, and they a lot of them want to go back home and open up the coolest restaurant in town, and they do that, and it's pretty hip and cool for about a week and a half, right? So something else opens. So if you're going to be in that arena, you've got to be on top of it every day, and you've got to be watching and figuring out what's next.
If you're going to be trendy, you better be trendy.
Exactly, exactly.
And that takes a lot of work, too. So city people really have become cognizant of a lot of changes in their food. And we go from vegans to paleo to keto. And do you have a way of managing all that?
No, but I do recommend that a restaurateur put together, if there's a person out there that like paleo or gluten-free, I want them to create a menu just for that person, and have that not just a menu but a cheat sheet that says, you know, hey, order this but substitute this or that.
Oh.
When you do a menu for that, I call it a handshake menu. It welcomes that person into
Makes them part of the family. Makes them part of the family.
Exactly.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking to menu engineer Greg Rapp about how restaurants get us to eat what they want us to eat, and maybe make our meal experience a little bit better in the process. We will be right back. Stay tuned. I'm hungry.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson
and menu engineer Greg Rapp. And today we're talking about how restaurants get us to eat what they want us to eat. Very important, too, because they need to stay in business. And the way they do that is by making a profit. And profit seems to be pretty slim in some circumstances. So anything you can do to get the consumer to spend a little bit more makes it a little bit easier for you to survive. And that's your job. Is it true, Greg? That's what you do.
Yep. That's what I do. More importantly is, as I keep saying, we want to bring our customer back. So we want the restaurant tour to help their customer find new items. And when a person gets when they get a menu that has too many items on it and it's not laid out well, and they look at it and they get confused, that what will happen is they'll default to an easier item.
I'll just take the hamburger.
Exactly. Yeah. When they go into a restaurant chain and they have this huge book of menu items and a huge bar list, and the customer says, "Oh, I know they got a burger. I got a beer." So they hand all that work back to the server and order that burger and beer. So, or something else. I look for the default items on a menu. That could be chicken tenders. Are very safe. They're something that people will fall back to in that segment of casual restaurant.
Well, let's take us to how you do go about engineering a menu. Where do you start? Do you have to visit the restaurant to start?
Yes. I get in my my trench coat and my Groucho Marx glasses with the big nose on mustache, and then take the newspaper with little eye holes in it, and I sit down and go into the restaurant before I start working on them, because I want to find out what I think about the restaurant, and I don't want them to know it's me. So
you're like the secret shopper.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I get my feel for it, and then the next day I go in and talk to the restaurant team and find out what their goals are and where they've been and what's on their mind and, and what they've tried in the past and what's worked, what hasn't worked. You know, where do they want to go from here?
So do people call you in when they're in trouble?
Not necessarily. Now, people know that a menu can't fix bad food. I mean, And I have a friend who's an expert in culture, and he works with the people side of things. And I always laugh and say my job's a lot easier because that people side is so overrated. I can go in and figure out the menu and piece it together so it becomes a silent salesperson, and people like to. They don't like to be sold, so it's a lot easier for me to go in and put a menu together that helps a person find something.
And in doing so, you can make the job of the wait person a lot easier, because then all they have to do is describe what you're interested in, what caught your attention on the menu.
Yes. And I also, though, teach the servers. I tell the restaurant team to put together what I call a backstory book, and that's a book of where your items came from. I'm working on a restaurant in Austin, Texas, where, you know, the owner of the restaurant was on the beach in Mexico, and he and his partner were having some shrimp items, and that made it to their menu. So we have a picture of the hotel that he was staying at and the beach, and now it becomes real, and the server then knows the story. They don't always have to tell the guest it, but because they know that story, they feel more confident in the food, and that food has more value to the server. So the server feels good about what they're doing.
And of course, they transmit that to the customer too. If they feel good about it, it comes out to the customer as well. Wow. So what is your favorite kind of restaurant to work with?
Very interesting question. It's all about the team, and it's funny because sometimes it's a restaurant that I've been to, you know, a few years ago. They have me come back every couple of years to energize the team on the menu, and so it's hard to say that I don't really have a favorite style of menu. I look at it more as working with the team and finding the teams that are really receptive to taking it to a higher level and moving in a new direction with their menu.
So well, let me
I work
Let me flip that question on its head then. What kind of restaurants do you not like to be called in on?
They're none. I've worked on hot dog stands at stadiums to the finest of fine dining in Hong Kong. And there's no menu that I don't like. I got to say that. I haven't seen a... I have had restaurants that, you know, I can't fix that their food wasn't good and they were not doing a good job. They needed a new chef rather than a menu engineer.
Right.
But what I try and do is find out what is on the chef's mind, what he or she is thinking of, and why they're putting these items on the menu, and tell your guest why it's on the menu. You know, they've tried hundreds of different items, and why did this item make it to the menu? You know, or why did this wine make it to the menu? You know, restaurateur tries hundreds of wines, but then it's not always about price. It's, you know, this goes with something but tell me the story about it.
So it seems like the story is what you're really helping people do, is tell a story with the menu. You're the storyteller,
exactly.
Aren't you?
Exactly. Pulling that story out of that restaurant team is what I like to do.
That's probably one of the biggest part of the job then.
Right.
And with respect to that, I saw a piece on NBC Today show, I think it was, where they had you do a market test, where you did an old-style menu and a new-style menu, and you had the wait people present both menus, and it turned out that you were able to sell a lot more food with a new menu.
Right. Once you know what you want to do, then you can focus on that and piece it together and lay the menu out. So we have good real estate and not so good real estate. You know, the upper right-hand corner in a menu is where you should put your best section. That might be your seafood section, might be your steak section, but what you put up in that upper right will tell the customer what kind of restaurant you are and what's important.
Mm-hmm. So, and this takes us back to the newspaper folks, right?
Right. Think about the New York Times. Every issue since 1959, Tiffany's has been on page 3 in the upper top right-hand side. They've been there forever, and they're going to be there forever. And for some of the younger listeners today, newspapers are these things that used to come out daily, and people would read them. Ask your parents about them.
There you go. It was interesting. I saw in the local paper today, a restaurant was advertising on the very bottom of the page. And I got to thinking, they haven't talked to the menu engineer. Maybe they should. So
exactly.
with respect to the menu real estate, which is a good way of thinking about it, because that's exactly what it is, do we go with black and white or color?
Ah, good question. Black on white is easier on the eye, the contrast. You know, when a restaurateur they think that if they put the item in red, it's going to stand out. But they put the red on a brown sheet of paper and then turn the lights down, that red goes away. So think about black on white standing out. So we're going to put the items that we want to sell in black with a white background. And they'll stand out. Now, I ask my restaurateurs not to go this far, but if they put a section in and put a purple background or some kind of design behind the item, it's harder to read and it won't sell as much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you put a purple background and then black type on top of that, it would be difficult to read, where something popping black on white is easier to read. And then there's the reverse menu, which is, you know, white lettering with all black with white lettering. And that's very difficult to read. And
So you're talking about contrast then, because when people come in, they're tired and they're hungry and they sit down and they open up the menu and you have that contrast that pops and it captures your eye and there it is. And what about...
And the more we write about that food item, the more value we give it. So if I write a whole page on it and put the price, that looks like a really good deal. But if I just put New York steak, $65, it doesn't have as much value. But if I wrote a whole paragraph about that steak, but of course we don't have that luxury of room, but there's a balance here.
But if you really want to sell something, it really helps to describe that, whatever it is you're offering.
And something for the listeners is when you go into a restaurant, go and see if they have a description on the steak, but I'll bet you can go to the hamburger and they'll describe that hamburger, and what's in it, and, you know, very interesting that people love to write the description on the burger, but not about the steak.
Not about the big money items like steak.
Exactly.
Good. So typeface is very important as well then, correct?
Right. Every newspaper and every magazine would use a serif typeface. Now, a serif, there are thousands of serif typefaces, but a serif is the little lines on the type, the little feet on the different typefaces. And so a magazine or a newspaper would use a serif typeface because it makes an imaginary line underneath the word. And the newspaper industry tells us that you can read 9 words more per minute with a serif typeface than with a sans serif typeface. That's a typeface that doesn't have those little feet. Now, those little feet make it look more old-fashioned. So if we have a hip, cool restaurant, we're going to use a sans serif typeface, but we know that it's harder to read, so we're just going to make it a little bit bigger, okay?
Okay. What about...
And then upper and lower case is easier to read than all caps. Think of a email that your grandmother sent you, and it's in all caps, it's hard to read.
Yeah.
But when it's in upper and lower case, it's easier to read.
So in all of those things, you're working on developing good contrast then.
Uh-huh.
So that it pops. And then you can take these items and put them in boxes or organize them in ways.
Yeah. Yep. Or put a picture of it. And a picture will sell 30%. Sales will go up 30% if we put a picture on it. But the latest research on pictures on menus is a person tastes that food in their mind when they see a picture of the food. So that first bite is taken, and that first bite is typically the best. That first bite of chocolate cake is better than the 10th bite of chocolate cake. So there's something to be said that we want to be careful with pictures because, again, they take that first bite. But also, we don't have a stylist in the kitchen, you know, working 4 hours to make that item look perfect like it does in the picture, right?
Well, there you go. It would take a tremendously good photographer to make food look good and taste good, right? It would take you really have to be a talented photographer to pull those things off. And but they do, pictures do sell. So when you know, for example, the quick serve restaurants, you know, the McDonald's and the Burger Kings are starting to use those photographs extensively now. It's on their menus and whatnot. When you walk in,
right,
that's what you see.
Right. Well, like I say, it's easier on the eye. So work is, an eye sees reading as work. So it will. That's why it will go to a picture before it will go to read. So that's why a picture works. Or a box works because the eye sees, you know, a sea of work, and then it will be directed over to that box. That's why we put a box on the items that we want to bring attention to.
And those are the items that the restaurant wants us to eat, correct?
Correct. And it's not just about profitability. It's about bringing you back, too, you know.
Which is profitability. Because if they can keep bringing you back, you're the least expensive customer to get because you're happy.
Exactly. Right. But when I look at a menu that doesn't have anything that stands out. I was in Thailand a few months ago, and you know, every item, there are 50 items on the menu, and nothing stands out. It's random that I'm going to pick the best item in that restaurant, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's important to figure out what you want people to buy and hold that up in one way or another and make it look really good. So this is a Food Chain Radio program, folks. Today we're talking with menu engineer Greg Rapp, who travels around the world teaching restaurants how to present their menu so that when you and I walk into the restaurant, we're tired and we're hungry, and we open up that menu, we're in for a good experience because they're going to present their best stuff right there for us to pick. And so we're learning a little bit about how all that works. So perhaps we can be better restaurant customers too from this knowledge. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Greg Rapp, menu engineer at menuengineers.com. We will be right back. Learn more about how we get our food. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, Greg, one of the things you talk about quite a bit is the need to tell a story. And one of the best ways of telling the story is with words, but you don't have many words to work with. So what are some of the most important points to bring up when you're describing food on a menu?
We don't want to make it a lot of work to order your meal, but we do want to teach our customers about what's going on in the restaurant. And today we can do that with a iPad menu where a guest can get as little or as much information as they want on an item. And I'm working with a iPad company that really does a great job of not putting things in little boxes like a lot of the iPad menus are doing, and that takes the brand away. We don't want to do it that way. We want to create a menu that you can find things easily, and then you can get more information on them if you want that information.
Click
and,
here.
And so we can do that
on a website too. Yeah, what did you mean by takes the brand away?
Well, a lot of these iPad menus put everything in the same little box where it has a little picture of the item and then a box. And if every restaurant has this same type of iPad menu, it like takes the brand away, takes the marketing and the feel of the menu away. And we don't want to do that. We want to give you a good feeling and give you, like I say, the story on the item, but not to make everything look exactly the same.
Gotcha. So let's go to
I call that an automat menu.
Gotcha. Let's go to the menu itself and talk about, well, pricing. But one of the first things that you mentioned is one of the most important things is to limit the number of options you're presenting to a potential customer. Why is that?
Well, we try and limit it to 7 items, because once you go to 8 or more, a person will, like I say, default. It gets too confusing for them. So a person can manage in their mind 7 items. So I try and keep every category down to 7 items. 5 is optimal. 7 is max. 3 is also a magic number on a menu. When I have 3 different drinks, for drink specials, a person can navigate through those 3 drinks and make a choice. So I don't want to confuse a guest. Mm-hmm. In the old days, you know, Dairy Queen had 30 or more flavors on their list, and now when they put their menu together, they have fruit flavors, chocolate flavors, cookie flavors, and chocolate. Anyway, they break it out into categories, so you don't have to read the whole thing. You can navigate to what you're interested in, and then dive in, and you don't have to read the whole menu.
Would that be one of the problems that McDonald's found itself in when it expanded its menu to include all kinds of salads and other items?
Exactly. And they don't give you much information on those items either. They just list them and so it's so much easier when things are in categories. Let's say they have a restaurant has a seafood item. They only have one seafood item. Why would put that in a seafood category so a person can navigate to seafood if they want to? If they don't, if that's not on their what I call a playlist, everybody's got a playlist of what they'll order, and if seafood is on their playlist, then they can navigate to that and figure it out, or they can navigate away from that. Mm-hmm. But they don't have to read that item to make their choice.
Gotcha. Make it easy to find. What you talk about, a menu decoy, where you put something up there to tell people that maybe this is not what you want, but maybe you can find something reasonable that won't be quite so expensive. What is a menu decoy?
Yeah, a decoy is something that's kind of laughable, and it's a fun item that we put on the menu that we know you're not going to order it, but it makes you think. It's like in Sri Lanka, there's a hotel that has a ruby sundae, and it's $10,000, and it comes with a ruby on top of it. There happens to be a jeweler in that hotel that has a lot of rubies, and if someone happened to order it,
they
run
the
credit card first, and then you run over and pick up the ruby and put it on the sundae. But then the other sundaes don't look so expensive, you know, and they're $8 or $10 or whatever it is, meaning it's not as laughable, and that's what we call a decoy. And so, why a decoy works is it's unexpected. Your brain gets excited when it sees something that's unexpected on the menu.
So there's the $1,000 lobster frittata, and you think, well, I'm going to buy that. But then there's a $20 asparagus omelet. Doesn't look so expensive anymore.
Exactly. And that's the work of a decoy. Dan Ariely has written books on that. He loves this concept, and he has a number of TED Talks. He's a professor at Duke, and he's actually written books on behavioral economics, on how people think and as they're putting together their orders.
Huh. And one of the most common mistakes you say that restaurateurs make is linking a menu item with a price.
Right. Well, when you do a price list where you have little leader dots, little dots that go over to a price, and then you have a list of prices, then a guest will go up and down that price list, find the cheapest item, and then go see what it is. So you're actually forcing the guest to read the menu by price. So I get out of that, I put the description on the menu item, then put a period, because we don't want it floppy. We want to make it stronger, so we put a period and then two spaces and then put the price without a dollar sign. Dollar signs remind people of money, and so when we remove those dollar signs from the menu, it actually softens all our prices.
Wow. So, kind of, it's camouflage.
Never thought of it that way, but it if you're looking for the cheapest item, you'll find it. But,
sure.
You know, you
sure.
don't. You go to a cheaper restaurant if you're that cheap.
Yeah. What you're trying to do is remove the price as the first consideration.
Exactly. Okay.
So you remove the dollar signs, get rid of that, kind of fuzz up the price so that it's not a big concern. And what about aligning things vertically and horizontally? What you described as pricing, what I saw was like a sentence description, and at the end of a sentence, which maybe is one line or two lines or three lines, but at the end of the sentence there was the period, space, and then a dollar sign. Do you use full dollars?
No dollar sign.
No dollar sign. But you use a do you use a full dollar amount, or do you use like
$29.95? Ah, oh, he's asking about the pricing format, and the pricing format will can makes a statement about your restaurant. So if I have an item that's $95, let's say $9.95, that makes the item friendlier and nicer. You know, it's kind of a neighborhood restaurant. Come on in, sit down. You know, the price is $95. It's friendlier. But when I go to a $99, I'm trying to trick you so you don't trust me as much, right?
Oh.
So you go, oh, it's just a penny more, so you don't trust me as a restaurateur as much.
So just those 4 cents.
Exactly. And then when you have the OO pricing, so you go to $10, that has attitude to it. It says, you know, hey, we're pretty hip here, and, you know, if you can't afford it, why are you in our restaurant seat, you know, with OO pricing? Or you take that OO away, and it's even got more attitude to it. It says, you know, it's pretty strong. W hotels would never put, you know, 99s or 95s on their menu. They're an OO concept, you know, mm-hmm. that fits their concept. If we did a 555 or a 666, that would be a Walmart. 888 is Walmart or Kmart pricing, and that doesn't feel good in a restaurant concept. So, and if we don't want you to understand the price, we'll spell it out. We'll put it in italics and write out, you know, $10, and it takes you a few minutes to read it and comprehend it. That used to be done on the old country club menus, you know, the italic type and the
right.
spelling it out. So, but that's the concept behind, you know, so just by the pricing of your food items. Now, the first time the Culinary Institute, the CIA, and the Cornell Hotel School, I work with both of them, and they studied these steps, and they came back and they said, look, Greg, that's true, but we also found that when you have the OO pricing, it gave a halo of quality to it, so that we're using better foods when you have the OO pricing. So is that a reason to use the OO pricing? I think that you should consider what kind of restaurant you are before you come up with your restaurant pricing format.
So just the little detail like that can make a big difference on how people see you and how people see their presence in your restaurant then.
Exactly.
You talk about using a heart-healthy logo.
Yeah, when we did this years ago, we'd put the little heart on the item, and it said heart healthy, and then people wouldn't buy it. It said this item is bland and boring. Why would you buy it? So we would kill the item years ago when we'd put that on there. Now today, do you remember that when we'd put the little heart healthy item,
yeah.
And a person was going out to celebrate or something, and they just would not order that, would kill the item. So
because it had no fats in it, it had no taste in it, right?
Well, and it just told you that it didn't have any taste to it, right?
This item does not have any taste. Do not order it.
Right. It's bland and boring.
So people didn't. So the future of menus... Where are we going with them? You mentioned digital.
Digital, but also the stories behind the items. And
stories.
You're going to be, like I was saying, you're going to be able to find the stories on the food items and where the recipe came from and what was the chef's inspiration? Where did they find this item? And then where did the food come from, and who was the fisherman or fisherwoman or lobsterman that caught this lobster, or all these things are what's coming to the restaurant side as I see it.
You mentioned one great example, the difference between trying to sell red beans and rice and selling grandma's Cajun red beans and rice.
When you put a name and make it more special, it tastes better. This is the work of Brian Wansick at Cornell.
It actually makes a difference in a taste?
It makes in the people will taste what you tell them they're tasting. And so just by writing a better description and putting something in there that makes it feel better, it's going to taste better. And that works. It will sell more too.
What we have a minute left, but what tricks can we use as consumers to be better restaurant patrons with respect to those menus? How can we get the best deal?
Use your server to help you and look at the reviews of the restaurant. You know, what did people, ask what is, I always ask what's good, and they go, oh, everything's good, but ask what sells, tell me what, that restaurateur put a lot of money into opening that restaurant, and there was something, they didn't do it because it's fun, they did it because they believe in something, so we want to find out what drives that restaurateur and find out what people go there for and they return for. So the server can help you do that. And and the menu items that are highlighted are typically the better items. That's what typically will sell better, and they'll be better items.
Well, Greg Rapp, you've been around the world designing menus. What's your favorite restaurant?
Two favorite restaurants. I'm from Dayton, Ohio, where... I grew up in Dayton, and the Pine Club is a steakhouse in Dayton, is one of my favorites. And then Fonda San Miguel in Austin, Texas, is where Julia Childs used to go when she wanted Mexican food. I think they're one of the best restaurants in the world. So
then we know where to go. And how do we tune in with you, Greg, if we're considering having our menu?
My email is Greg with 2 G's, G-R-E-G-G, at menuengineers.com.
There you go.
And the Menu Engineers has a lot of good stories on and shows some before and afters.
Thank you so much for joining us, Greg Rapp, Menu Engineer. And thank you all for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.